Shop the Sherwin-Williams Spring Sale and get 35% off paints and stains March 13th through the 23rd. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back rolling through the first hour of The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5, as the clock turns over to the 2 p.m. hour. We turn it over to hour number two of the show, Barry, Nick, and myself, as we take you through a Monday in the big city. And, fellas, I had gotten the information that Rudy got in, but unfortunately it was just a little too late when we got off the air Friday. But just really great now that we can come back out of the weekend on a Monday. And Rudy is confirmed. He just texted me. He's going to join us at 2:30. So we're going to hear from him directly. But if you didn't see it, because they kind of had video chats with each of the guys on ESPN, he has become such a dog lover, and he's living in Austin now, that he literally taped, I don't know if he taped it, but he did this message to say, you know, what it was like waiting for the call and everything like that. And then when he got it, he's like, I needed high fives. And both the dogs high-fived him on the video. and it was just awesome. That's who Rudy is. I mean, he's just so laid back. And we all know from being around him so much, no one deserved it more. And that's why it hurt us every time he got turned away, that this was just such a perfect thing for him to get in this year.
I never really met Rudy, but I can tell you that they say don't judge a book by its cover. But Rudy seemed like, just by watching him and his mannerisms and the way he talked to people, he did seem like a genuinely good dude. Like, you know, there's some guys that come across as a jerk, but they're really good dudes. And then there's some dudes that come across as nice, but they're a-holes behind the scenes. And I don't know, you know, and apparently from hearing you and Calvin and other people that I know Rudy, he's just was a good dude, man. He's just a down-to-earth, genuinely nice guy. So it's good to see him finally get what he deserves when it comes to the Hall of Fame because of his abilities on the court and on the bench.
Yeah, and you know what? And he truly did. I mean, he cared about all of his players, to what Murph was saying too, in the fact that whether it was good, bad, or indifferent, he would fight for them tooth and nail, and he never wanted, you know, any of the publicity for anything. He wanted it all to go to those players, but it was because that's just who he was his whole career. I mean, you know, Murph was telling me stories about he was so sick in the hotel that he couldn't even get out of bed, but that Murph, of all people, would, like, carry him, you know, off the bus to the arena and like, help him get in the locker room. And then all of a sudden he'd go out and he'd give you 17 points and, you know, Murph is shaking his head going, I have no idea how he even got out of bed, but yet he said he couldn't let his teammates down. And that's, you know, that's the kind of things that really stick with you, because like I said, the thing to me that sticks out is everybody saying this is the greatest Hall of Fame class ever. And of course, all the attention, and rightfully so in terms of from a playing career, goes to Kobe and Garnett and Duncan. But, you know, when you talk about Rudy winning a gold medal with no NBA players, because there was a lockout. And the fact that he still took a team where I think Brad Miller was his starting center, the one-time Rocket, and yet he won a gold medal. And, you know, he wins the two championships, but everybody said, well, that's because Jordan didn't play. And yet I was there when Michael and Rudy and Charles and everybody on a road trip, we were at Charles's house in Phoenix, and they had the discussion. And Michael said to him flat out, and I got him to admit this on an interview I did for Rockets TV when I was with the Rockets too. But Michael said, you know what, you had guys that you could throw at me, and I felt like I could get mine. But he said, we had no answer for that big Nigerian, and he was the best player on the planet at that time. And so he gave the Rockets their due, because that's the other thing that's so frustrating is for everything Rudy has done, there's someone that wants to counter it with, yeah, but you didn't, you know. You didn't have a full, you know, it's actually almost a negative that he didn't have NBA players, but he won a gold medal and that he won back-to-back championships, but yet they want to say, but if Jordan played, he wouldn't have won one.
Why do you think it is that everybody wants to say, yeah, but when it comes to Rudy?
I think kind of just because of everything else that you were saying that everybody realizes too is because they think he'll take it. Because they think that he's such a nice guy that he's not going to be, you know, he's not going to go out and lash out. He's not going to, you know, be the guy that, like, even when it comes, even when he had all the information in his pocket for years that he could have said, well, Michael told me personally, or, you know, this or that or the other thing that would have justified everything. He was just like, you guys can draw your own opinions. I mean, I'm not going to argue that with you because that's just his disposition and his personality, that he's never been out for the spotlight or the accolades. He's done it just simply for the love of the game and for the close-knit relationships he's had with all of his players.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, I'm so happy for him, though. There are certain people in Houston sports history that you root for no matter what, and there are certain people that you want to see get what they deserve. And it's funny because Calvin was leading the charge for two of the biggest names that come to mind that weren't getting their just due, and that is Guy V. Lewis and Rudy T. And that's why I asked Calvin what I asked him, because there's more, like, Demetrius texted the show and was like, oh, Robert Horry's the answer to that question. And people loved Horry, but I'm not sure that there's got to be this – the love for a guy, I mean, because Horry went on and won more championships in other towns. It would be like if Earl or Nolan or Olajuwon or somebody like that at that level isn't getting their just due. But I don't know who that is in this town, but I'm sure there is or will be somebody.
Well, and you and I have had this conversation on the show. And my feeling on Robert Horry is, unless we know that the criteria is solely based or you know, mainly based around championships, I'm not going to put a guy in the Hall of Fame that averaged 8 points and 5 rebounds a game, because statistically, as much as we're wrapped up in analytics these days, statistically, I can't verify. There's not enough there for me to say he's Hall of Fame. Now, is he Hall of Fame in terms of championships won and as a winner? Absolutely. But there's a huge difference between that and being a basketball Hall of Famer, which to me means and encompasses from all-star games to, you know, to championships to a bunch of points and statistical categories where you rank at a certain very, very high level that Robert Horry just simply isn't.
Oh, well, I'm going to ask both of you guys, since I asked Murph, who's your next that should be in but isn't for Houston?
For Houston,
and it doesn't have to be basketball. It could be anything. But who's your next? Now that you know, because there was in the NFL, I think it was Elvin Bethea or Robert Brazil. I forget which one, but John McClain was lobbying for years.
Yes, Robert Brazil, I think,
to get Robert Brazil into the NFL Hall of Fame, and John McClain did an outstanding job of making that happen. Whether it was Elvin Bethea or Robert Brazil, but there's always one, right? So who is it? Who is the next one that we should be fighting for to get in?
It's a great question, and I'm glad you opened it up to all the Houston teams, because as a Rocket, I hate to say this, but that's why there was such an amazing aura around that Rockets team, because to most people's argument, there wasn't, until Clyde got here, there wasn't another All-Star Hall of Fame player except for Hakeem Olajuwon. So from a basketball perspective, and then Yao would be a guy you'd question because of all the injuries that cut his playing career short, but he got in as a contributor because of what he meant to international basketball. I think for me, if you're going to have anybody in Houston that's kind of borderline, I think from an Astros perspective, maybe it's like a Jeff Kent, a guy that, you know, had some good years with the Astros, had a better career than people thought. He's kind of fringy in terms of who's the next Houston based player, at least had some time in Houston that gets in, but you know, Baggy got in and there was a little bit of question mark there and Bish is already in. So, I don't know. I don't know that I have anybody else in mind. Nick, do you or Bear? I don't know.
No, not in my mind. I couldn't come up with one at the top of my head at all.
From a baseball perspective, I think there's a couple of names. I felt like back in the day, Billy Wagner was.
I got one too. Yeah, I thought of one just now as you said that.
Yeah, and then I would a name that popped into my head that I would have to do a lot more in terms of research, and but Roy Oswalt was pretty dominant in his day, but I would have to see like how dominant and for how long, and you know he did leave for the Phillies for a couple years, but. Yeah, Roy Oswalt is a name that kind of hit 20 game winner a couple of times. And so
I think you're spot on with both of them because Billy Wagner is one that a lot of people have been saying should be. And I'll give you the one that slipped my mind, but definitely is one that's all Houston is Lance Berkman. Because if you look at his numbers from a switch hitting perspective and all that he was able to accomplish, again, so quietly and not ever after the spotlight, but he won a World Series. He's got his titles. He's got his, you know, he's got his numbers. He's got his switch hitting numbers, and he's a guy that kind of fits that mold too, along with Wagner. And as you mentioned, Roy O, he's got the analytics to back up what also was just, you know, from a local perspective, a very, very heroic career in terms of what he meant to the Astros.
Now, are you going to say, I'm going to say Andre Johnson might be the guy overall because I'm sitting there thinking from a football perspective, baseball, basketball, now that Rudy's in, I don't know that – I mean, basketball, there's – I don't think anybody's clamoring for Steve Francis or Catino Mobley or anything like that.
Yeah, no.
But, you know, and baseball, the names that we mentioned are borderline, but I think Andre Johnson's a name that might – bubble up to the top of that list of guys that because he was hamstrung by crappy quarterback play.
Yeah, I think he should get in. I still think that just in terms of his peers and the voters and the media, I expect Andre Johnson to still get in. I think the guys that we mentioned, I think Billy Wagner has probably the best chance, but I think in the case of Oswalt that you brought up and Berkman, you're going to have guys that may not get in ever. And I think they're the fringy players that Houstonians appreciate more because they saw them on a night-in, night-out basis. But I don't think that there was enough national attention to get them over the top.
Well, you say that Andre Johnson's in. I don't know, though, because we know what he meant to this franchise and how dominant he was. But, you know, he didn't have a lot of touchdowns. And
the touchdowns is going to haunt
I don't know
him,
where he
all
ranks.
Pros and the you know the Pro Bowls and the All Pros and the
yeah,
things
the
like
Pro
that
Bowls,
are going
to. Do you count Pro Bowls in football because everybody goes to the Pro Bowl because all the people
all
that
pro,
win their awards don't want to go.
The All Pro teams are more highly regarded than as you mentioned the Pro
True.
Bowl because you're right everybody gets the invites but I think that he did have that respect of both the media and colleagues and peers in the league. To where maybe I'm wrong. I just have a feeling he's going to get in. I think the other guys we mentioned are going to be probably scrapping tooth and nail if they have a chance.
Yeah, Ben said Andre Johnson. Lenny Jobin says, what about a four-time division champion coach? Hell no. Here's the thing.
God.
I'll go the opposite way. If Bill O'Brien gets in the Hall of Fame, I will lobby to have him kicked out. I will
well, first thing I'm doing is
to have him removed.
I'm lobbying for his bust to be exactly that. Instead of his headshot, it should be two boobs. And then make sure it's not wearing a Texans hat. Make sure it's either a Penn State hat or a Patriots hat because I don't want any part of that association.
Yeah, it would be the only time that it would be appropriate that it would be called a bust, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that better not happen. But, yeah, you know, you bring up a good – and, look, I think it's debatable. I think – that's the bad thing that we talk about, especially with the voting to get in for these Hall of Fames. I think that football is the worst in terms of McClain and other people have said, you don't just, you know, submit who you want in the Hall of Fame. It's literally all the voters in a ballroom in a hotel, and you have to get up and lobby for whoever you are nominating to be in. And then it's an open discussion back and forth with other people trying to like basically crap on your suggestions. And that's why McClain has said he and others have had to really lobby for certain players that they were passionate about. And from a basketball perspective, it's gotten better, but I've told you guys this on and off the air. Murph was on the committee and he was so passionate about Guy V and he came back so frustrated. He'd tell me that in his mind, it was a slam dunk. Guy V should be in and the politics involved and the basically, what are you going to do for me if I vote for him kind of things, that he literally took his name off the committee and wanted nothing more to do with the voting process because he was so ticked off and frustrated that it was more a political contest than it was who should be in because of what they've done.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. But thank God for people like Murph in their rallying and lobbying for people to get in that deserve it.
Yeah, no question about it. And you know, Murph is, again, a rare breed in terms of the we know the passion level he brings to a lot of things. But when he believes in something, he's going at it 150%, and he's not going to stop. And you know, the two guys, as you mentioned, Barry, that he really felt like it shouldn't even be a question was Guy V and Rudy T. The fact that he's, you know, they're both in, and we can even ask Rudy about it, but, you know, there was – to have that guy on your side, it's pretty – you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody better in terms of someone that could, you know, be your PR person. So
no doubt.
All right, Rudy T is scheduled to join us in about 15 minutes, so we'll take a quick break, come back with a whole lot more. It's the second hour of The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver for the
Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, what the hell?
Ain't this some sh**?
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, just rolling through the first half of the show, and there is plenty more good stuff to go as we take this segment to wrap up the first half, and then we'll open up the third quarter, so to speak, with Rudy Tomjanovich, the newly named Hall of Famer, who's going to join us via the phone from his home in Austin as we catch up with the man that was a Rockets legend as a coach and a player. We were talking before the break about this, the Hall of Fame and this Texan stuff. Again, getting back to real quick the press conference and the call Friday with Bill O'Brien and Cal McNair and Jack Easterby with the season ticket holders, everybody, including the media, was pulling quotes from that. And when I heard the actual quote from O'Brien, I don't know if you guys heard it or not, where he spelled out team twice in trying to justify the trade of DeAndre Hopkins. I know they were trying to spin it in their favor and control the narrative by having, you know, their questions and their guy Vandermeer and all that stuff. I don't know that any team trying to spin things their way could have spun it more to get even more people against them than what I heard and saw what happened Friday.
What do you mean team? I didn't hear that. He was spelling
so part
out
of
the word
was
team.
Everything, Barry, everything we do as a Houston Texans organization is all about team. That's what we're doing here. Everything is about the team. And he spelled it out twice amongst his quotes. And I was like, bro, you got to be careful because there's a lot of people that are going to be spelling a lot of bad words about you when we get closer to the season. Because I just, every season ticket holder, even the media members I talked to were just like, I can't believe that they said the things that they said.
I thought you meant he was spelling it out like T, trade away good players.
No.
E, employ people that aren't good at their job. A, I thought, like, you know, I thought that's what he was doing.
Empower me to be an a-hole.
Yeah. A is just a-hole. And then M, make dumb calls on the field. Team! I mean, I thought that's what he was doing. Look. He's going to come out and say it's all about the team because that's an easy deflection for a head coach and a GM to say. You can sit there and tell me till you're blue in the face that, well, we make decisions as a team and we make decisions that are going to make us better. DeAndre Hopkins on your field wearing your uniform, catching passes from your quarterback makes you better. Period. End of story. I don't care what other argument you want to give me. There's none that can trump the fact that because right now he's one of the best 3 to 5 receivers in the game, you're better with him than without him. So what you're saying is not true. It's just a, it's just you covering your tracks because you had a personal vendetta or you had a, an issue with him as a person that you couldn't resolve as a GM and head coach to get past it so that you could be a better football team. Don't give me that crap about salary or none of that. You make it work when you have guys like DeAndre Hopkins, period.
And the message you're sending when he was making, what, 10 a year and saying that he wanted more money and we weren't going to be able to do that for him. Well, that's like saying, you know, you've got one of the top players at his position in any sport and then saying, but as an organization, we didn't feel like paying him as such. That's just absolute stupidity because of the fact that that's like saying, well, we've got James Harden, but if we can't pay him like a sixth man, then we're not going to, we don't want him on our team. Because essentially what you're saying is I'm not about winning. I'm about the bottom line again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an easy cover up to say, well, we had to make a, it's a football decision. No, this was personal. And because it's leaked now that you didn't like his practice ethic or whatever. Well, guess what? Veterans earn the right to not have to practice. He showed up during the game. If it would be different if DeAndre Hopkins was Will Fuller, if DeAndre Hopkins had Will Fuller's production or a, you know, on the field, because he wouldn't be there, then you'd be like, hey, bro, you don't practice and you don't play. You got to get your ass on the field somehow. But that's not the case. DeAndre Hopkins showed up every single Sunday. He gave his all, even when they were getting their asses handed to them. He was still out there making catches and putting his body on the line. Remember he had the rib injury or whatever, or back?
Yeah, yep.
Still out there balling, getting mud holes stomped in him. Don't give me that because he didn't want to practice. He earned that.
From the Iverson quotes to just basically what do you want out of your team? Do you want an all-star on the practice field? Or do you want a guy that is not so worried about getting major minutes on the practice field, but every time he suits up and puts that number and that logo on for you, he's a guy that's going to leave it all on the field and give you numbers that you're not going to find anywhere else.
Yep.
So with that being said, Manny Fresh is on hold. He wants to get in here to the show. Manny, what's going on, man?
Manny. Guys, first and foremost, I hope you guys are healthy.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Trying to.
Well.
Trying to stay
healthy.
You
and your family, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, listen, what's funny to me is you look at Brady last year, and I know you get points of Father Time as to why he wasn't that good, but I think, in my opinion, the main reason why Brady fell off last year was because he didn't have Gronk. And the Patriots, although maybe they tried, maybe they didn't, I don't really know, but they didn't bring in a Gronk equal to for Tom Brady to count on. Now you look at Ben Roethlisberger. When he didn't have Antonio Brown and when he didn't have Schreister, he wasn't as good. When you look, you know, look around the league, and when you take a guy's number one away, as great as they may be, they're not as good as they were when they had their one. And it was common sense, and what y'all are talking about with DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson, you know, I'm sorry to say, but if you think Watson held on to the ball with Hopkins on the field, imagine what it's going to look like in 2020 in terms of season with him having absolutely nobody to throw to. And the perfect example was in the Buffalo game. The first half, the Bills did what they needed to do to shut Hopkins down, and the Texans got shut out the first half. And then all of a sudden, DeAndre said, you know what, enough of this. Throw me the football, and let's go win this football game.
And we're losing you, Manny, but we appreciate the call. Good stuff. Look, the bottom line is we knew he didn't have many weapons, but his security blanket in New England was Gronk. So point taken there. And the other thing is, how many times in the history of pro sports are you going to find a team that takes the best player in his prime and you say you don't want him because you don't want to pay him? I mean, so essentially you want to pay guys that aren't worthy of being paid in the top six, like your kicker, a linebacker, and one of your linemen, but you legitimately have one of the top three receivers in the game, and you don't want to pay him, and that's why you're going to let him go play for somebody else? It's just asinine.
Yeah, I think he makes a good point about weapons, and you know, and it is true. You can't throw the ball to yourself, and we've all given credit to Tom Brady for not having a ton of weapons throughout his entire career, but he did have Gronk, and that really helps. And when you know football, you still, as a quarterback, you still rely on a receiver, And when you have one that can get open, when you have one that can high point the ball, when you have one that catches everything within his catch radius, because, I mean, the dude's the ginormous hands and the concentration and the ability to separate. The fact that he's physical, and he's always been physical with other corners and safeties that try to cover him. All of that comes into play with performance and affecting the team around him, because you can make Will Fuller better because people know they got to double DeAndre Hopkins. You can make it Deshaun Watson better because he can know at the end of the day he can run around back there all he wants. But if he can find DeAndre Hopkins and just throw it up a la Johnny Manziel with Mike Evans back in the A&M days, chances are they're going to move the ball forward with that. All that's gone now. All that is gone. You think everyone's going, well, thank God Randall Cobb's here to fill the shoes of DeAndre Hopkins. Not happening. There's nobody that can fill those. There's about three guys in this league right now that could fill those shoes. It's not happening. And if you're Deshaun Watson, that Manny Fresh's point is valid. You're going, damn, my production is going to suffer now, and I'm trying to get paid.
Yeah, no question about it. Good stuff there. Okay, so that'll about do it for the first half of the show. We've got Rudy Tomjanovich coming up next as we talk to him about his announcement that he's going to be headed to the Hall of Fame. Before we go to the break, I do want to tell you about the good people at Infuse Energy. I switched to Infuse Energy about 3.5 years ago. I just re-upped with them because I've saved more money over the last 3+ years than I ever could have imagined with my previous energy provider. And it was painless because their sole focus is to take care of their customers. So they do it every single day. They have the highest rating you can get for customer service, a 5 out of 5 star with the Public Utilities Commission of Texas. And their sole focus is you, the customer. Check them out at Infuse Energy. Energy.com, or better yet, call them 844-INFUSE2, 844-463-8732. Right off the top, if you mention ESPN 97.5, you're going to get a $25 bill credit off your first bill, and then the process goes from there. You're going to have a human being on the phone, not an automated system. They're going to ask you as many questions as you ask them because they're going to pinpoint when you use energy the most, when you use it the least, and it, whether it be for your business or your family, how they can get you the best deal possible. Simply put, it's affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back and 100% green energy at your fingertips. They absolutely are going to take care of you every step of the way. And believe me when I tell you, infuse energy into your life.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
From downtown, it's a 10-point lead, down to 15 seconds. Elijah Wan for three. Yes!
One thing to say to those non-believers, don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
90 in the books, 90 still to go, and what a great way to open up the second half of the show. Joined now by the new Hall of Famer, the coach you guys loved with back-to-back titles and so much more, the player that was absolutely fantastic as well, Rudy Tomjanovich. Coach, I appreciate you always, and joining us is just a special treat. Thank you so much, and congratulations.
Joel, it's so good to be with you guys, and for such a good reason, too.
Well, you know what, Coach? I think you know, because we're friends on Facebook, that without getting emotional, you meant so much to so many of us because you showed us the ropes while we went through two magical seasons with the Rockets. And we were so passionate about wanting to get you where you belong. And I even said it to you when you got inducted into the Houston Hall of Fame. But I just can't imagine, what were the emotions like? You talked about it a little bit, but you know, you were up for a few years now where every year you get built up with anticipation and then the letdown only, and what your emotions were when you finally got that call.
Yeah, it was, you know, I had actually fell asleep, and the phone was ringing, and picked it up. And I go, oh, am I prepared for this? And the president of the Hall of Fame, John DeLeva, I think, is his name. And he was speaking and speaking very slowly, and I was hanging on every word. I'm like, when's he going to say it? When is he going to say it? Yes or no? Or and when he said, you're in, boy, what a relief. And, you know, having to answer those questions about how do you feel about this and, you know, the last several years, it's just good to get that gone and away. And then just elation.
For sure. Barry, you get warm?
Yeah. Hey, Coach, did you ever get angry at any point during this process? Because you talked about it's finally over. You don't have to answer those questions anymore. Was there ever a point where you – I'm sure you got frustrated. Did you ever get angry? Did you ever just give up on the whole thing?
No, anger was not the deal. I am – you know, I've had some adversity in my life over the years, and I've learned to not overreact to what you think might be a bad deal, that good things can still come, you know, and it's not always on the time schedule that I want, you know. And so I just hung in there, and you know, everything turned out good. I feel that I was so privileged and lucky, even though it takes a lot of work, just to have a career in the NBA. The chances of anybody making it to the NBA is so small, and then the chances of being a coach and having success, it's so hard to win. The game is so competitive, and, you know, we went through some great, great players. I'm very proud of the championship because of the people that we beat, and those guys are all in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, I did look at that and say, God, you know, we beat those guys. They were in the Hall of Fame. And anyway, everything is good now, and couldn't be more happy.
Coach, talk a little bit about, because you were an innovator, and I know, you know, and it goes back to some of the great quotes you had along the way, stay hungry, stay humble. But you don't. This is tough for you because you don't like to talk about yourself. But you were an innovator when you had Dream, but to maximize the double teams, you inverted the offense to go inside out to shooters, and now it's looked upon as like a common thread of NBA offenses. But you were way ahead of your time. How did that all develop when you put Kenny Smith and Matt Bullard and Sam Cassell and Robert Horry around Dream?
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right, Joel. Spacing is so important, and what we did right from the beginning is we changed the way where we went when we threw the ball into Akeem. A lot of teams, when they throw it to the post, they now cut through and go out the other side. We thought that would not work well, what we wanted to do. So what we did is we filled the strong side, the side where the ball is, we filled that corner, and then we moved the two other outside players over, and it was easy for Akeem to read those defenses and find the open man. And Akeem was so important in my career. I mean, I was very lucky and fortunate to have him on the team when I got the job. But I knew Akeem very well because he was I was with the team when we looked at him and what I had seen. But, you know, we all know about his shot blocking, his rebounding, his defense, and his scoring. But really the passing that he did, we could go back to the many games that Vernon Maxwell made the last shot. It came from Akeem. And then the big game in New York when he threw the ball to Sam at the top of the key to win that big game there. So I was just blessed to have such a versatile, all-around great player.
Now, I want to scare the hell out of you here. To set up this call, I had your Rockets roommate on the show at 1:30, And he decided it was a perfect time to do a tell-all on the greatest stories of rooming with Rudy Tomjanovich. To say that he said that you may or may not have slept with members of the Murphy family, but only just being in the same bed, in the same room, was the tamest story we got from him. Would that scare you at all?
No. In fact, there were times there were more than one Murphy in the bed with me. Yeah, it was always an adventure.
Well, and I wanted to just touch a little bit on the relationship that you and Calvin had, because you guys were dear friends throughout, and you made the trip from, you know, you guys made the transition, San Diego to Houston, and then, you know, kind of growing up through the early years of the Rockets in Houston. And obviously, you know this, but there was no one that was a bigger supporter that was, you know, promoting Rudy T for the Hall than Calvin Murphy. And that, you got to love the fact that, that you got a friend for life that was so dedicated to getting you where he already was.
Yeah, absolutely. Calvin and I developed a great relationship. We came in and we were matched up with two other players. We both had veteran roommates, and we were both struggling a little bit with our roommates, just, you know, different people living together. It's not always smooth. And then, you know, I was walking outside of the Marriott Hotel in Atlanta, and it's an outdoor sort of motel, and I was going to the movies. I think we had 5 days in Atlanta, and I walked by Calvin's room. He sees me through the window, and he comes running out of the room in his underwear, and he's asking me where I'm going. And I said, "Murphy, ain't got any clothes on." He says, "I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to the movies. Can I come? Can I come?" I said, "Of course you can. What's wrong?" Well, his roommate was having him, his hyper behind, resting in the afternoons when he was used to watching his cartoons, and he couldn't even have TV on. So he was completely frustrated, and we went to the movies that day, and he said, "I'm going to ask the coach if we could become roommates." And when his veteran roommate found out he was leaving, he blamed it on the coach and said the coach wanted him to change.
Now, Coach, that had nothing to do with one of your roommates sleeping in the nude, did it?
What's that?
That had nothing to do either with one of your two roommates sleeping in the nude and that you guys got to be roommates?
No, not at all.
Okay, I didn't want to let that cat out of the bag.
Yeah, so it was a heck of an experience. And so after a couple days, we were both very fired up after games, and it'd be very late. And we both like music. I like soul music, and Calvin, of course. So he said about 3 o'clock, when the old test pattern used to come on the TV, he said, "Hey, you mind if I play some music?" And I said, "Hey, man, that's a great idea. I think that's great." I'm thinking Smokey Robinson, something mellow, the Stylistic, you know. At 3 in the morning, he puts on James Brown.
I knew it.
And screeching, and then he gets up and starts dancing. I'm like, "Holy, this is going to be a tough assignment right here."
Hey, Coach, when did you know you wanted to be a coach? At what point in your playing career or life in general did you know that's something you wanted to end up doing?
You know, I did not really know. That wasn't a plan that I talked about. I really enjoyed working with players and, you know, passing on some tips about things I liked that. Didn't, you know, and I thought, you know, maybe somewhere down the line, I'll want to do that. And this is, you know, while I'm in the NBA. And then when the situation happened with Don Chaney, who I really love, loved working for him. Such a good man. And when we found out that we couldn't save him, that Carol and I were hoping to go and convince them not to do it, and they said, it's too late, it's done. And even then, I thought Carol should get the job. You know, he had coached me, and very, very wise basketball man. But Steve got us together, and he says, well, I've got to come out of here with a coach. And he says, Carol, I can't give it to you because of your medical situation. And he says, he can't coach. And he said, Rudy, it's up to you. You know, you gotta, I'll give you some time. And Carol and I had a good talk. And he said, if you don't take this, you know, they'll probably bring somebody else in and we won't have a job. And he promised that he would give everything he had, and he did. I mean, I felt so secure with Carol there next to me, and very, you know, very sound in the fundamentals and the little things that a lot of times pro players don't think about. And that was a great combination to have that. And, you know, working together. And then my other guys that we brought in, Larry Smith, Bill Berry, Boylan, Wellesley, and Cooper, and Melvin Hunt, of course. I can't forget Melvin Hunt. All those guys were great. They started the way I did in the video room. And I knew how lonely that job was, so I had them rotate where they would be with the team some and not feel like they were, you know, in some prison back in the video room with no windows and things like that.
Well, Coach, here's one of the biggest compliments that I saw being so close to you guys and that team is the fact that you were labeled the players, Coach. But the great thing was that your players knew that when you really – did speak up, it meant something. And the situation that I'll always remember is you get that big win in overtime in game one in Orlando in the 95 finals. And I remember at shoot around that day, the guys were probably too loose and they were screwing around and they were, you know, feeling themselves. They were all happy as can be. They figured they had it. And you called them together at midcourt and basically just told them, fellas, look, the way you're acting right now, if you take that over into the court tonight, they're going to kick your ass. And you're going to be here in a really tough series. And I saw every face on every guy just kind of refocus. And I wasn't sure when we went back to the hotel, like, you know, because a lot of these guys, as we talked about, have egos and you don't know how they're going to react. And they came out from the jump and they put a whooping on that Orlando team. And I will never forget, because to me, your speech absolutely refocused an entire roster.
Yeah, I did not like what I saw, and I knew how good that Orlando team was. They killed us during the regular season, and they were killing us that first game. And by a miracle, with the missed shots, you know, by Anderson, mm-hmm. it gave us a chance. And then Kenny makes, you know, a fantastic big shot, a shot that's not talked about enough. We talk about the Mario Ellie shot, which was fantastic, and ended, well, that didn't even end the game. That game went on, you know, like for a half an hour after that, even though it was only a couple seconds because we fouled. But that Kenny shot was so big, you know, and that changed. They were a young team, and very listening to some of to Shaq and all them, they started saying, well, hey, those guys are champions. That's why they did that. And it really helped us because they were super good. They had a lot of talent. And I'm so proud how our guys did respond.
I got to ask you, Coach, because obviously synonymous with you is the speech at the end of that second championship. And I've always been curious. I don't think I've ever asked you this, but did you script that at all? Because I know, you know, your man Gene Peterson was notorious for scripting and then just going off script. But yeah. I was always curious about if you had scripted any part of the Heart of a Champion speech before, because that's got to be a tough thing when you're preparing for a game seven.
Yeah, well, listen, this is what had happened. In our series with Phoenix, mm-hmm. where they had us down and then we came back, Kevin Johnson said, those guys have the heart of a champion. They just don't give you the game. They're going to fight for it and all that. And then Charles said, the Rockets are like Texas roaches. You step on them, you think they're dead, and they keep. So I heard both those things in that series. I thought the analogy of the heart of a champion was better than, you know, way to go, roaches. But also at that time, there was some critique of our trade to get Clyde Drexler. And some coaches and other people spoke up and said it was a dumb trade. You never trade a big for a smaller guy. And Clyde was not a small guy. He was a big, strong guy at his position, could play two positions, could rebound, could pass, could do all those things. But then we had the injuries when Max was out and Akeem were out, and we fall all the way to the sixth seed, that people were saying that we're going to be the only team that won a championship and didn't even make the playoffs the next year. And they were saying these things. I had never heard people openly critique people like that. Usually it's the media, but this were other coaches and players in the league. And when I said, a lot of people say that the quote is never underestimate the heart of a champion. It's more like a guy scolding somebody that don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion. Because, you know, hey, we showed you guys.
Outstanding. Yeah. Coach, three names I want to get from you. Who was the toughest person you ever played against? Who was the toughest person you ever coached against? And who was your favorite player to coach? Not necessarily the best, but who was it that you enjoyed coaching the most?
Those are good questions. So let's go over them again. What was the first one?
The toughest player you ever played against.
Well, I tell you what, on any given night, somebody could kick your butt. You know, I love playing against Dave DeBuscher. He was my childhood hero. He actually recruited me for the University of Detroit when he was the player coach for the Pistons. He came, picked me up, and took me out, and I met with her. You know, playing against him was good, but he wasn't a big, you know, volume scorer. So I remember thinking that I was doing a pretty good job on Bob Love, the great forward with the Chicago Bulls. And I was holding him into the mid-teens most of the time, but they slowed the pace down and they played a slower game. And you know, I made that mental note that, hey, I'd do pretty good on this guy. And he exploded for 44 on our court. And I said, I can never relax like that again and, you know, think that I've got the number on a guy. I do have some scars on my, I have a broken orbit for playing against Havlicek, where he was driving. I came over to take a charge. He stuck his elbow right in my ear and broke the bone there. And I'm laying on the floor and I'm ready to jump up because they called a charge. They called it a and one, all on you. You know, so you always have to be on your best defense because anybody could really give it to you.
All right, favorite or toughest guy you ever coached against?
You'd have to say Michael Jordan and the Bulls. Very tough. Even though we had success against them, he was very hard to contain.
And your favorite player that you ever coached? Like, well, who did you enjoy? I should say, who did you enjoy coaching the most?
Well, I loved so many of them. It's very hard for me to pick one guy. I love different guys for different reasons, but excuse me, I just love Sam Cassell. Sam Cassell was a guy that I saw, excuse me, and they had several guys rated ahead of him, and I did the tapes on him, and I said, I'll do this guy and get rid of him, and then look at those other guys. Well, when I looked at the other guys, I said, God, I like that Cassell guy way better than these guys. So I wound up watching his whole season and fell in love with him. And what I liked about him is that I could put him in the game coming off the bench, and he could still get it done. A lot of guys can't play off the bench. I thought he was definitely good enough to be a starter for us, but I loved that he was a gamer, and I thought we had an advantage with the second team, with him on the second team.
Well, Coach, I certainly appreciate this. I don't want you to have to go to a drive-through testing location because of that cough. and to avoid getting emotional, you know, there are so many of us, Tim Frank, myself, and others, that you showed the ropes to that we will always be indebted to you for, and we love you so much and are so appreciative, but we could not be happier for you, and I just wanted to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you and congratulations, and no one deserves it more.
Well, thank you so much, and the way you guys feel just touches me in such a wonderful, warm way. I cannot express how grateful and how lucky and fortunate I feel that I was surrounded by such good people. And, you know, you guys did such a great job. And I always felt safe. I always felt we were part of a big family.
Well, you made us feel that way. And so now forever I will think of you and say, go Roaches.
All right. Let's go.
Thanks, Coach.
All right, guys.
There you go. That's Rudy T. Rudy Tomjanovich, the latest member of the Basketball Hall of Fame and the coach that will always be loved here in Houston, Texas. We'll take a quick break, get to hour number three of the show next. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is ESPN 97.5.